FM Stereo. Ask the MP. Ask the Right Honorable is in the hot seat. Ask the MP. Ask the MP. With Farai on CFM Stereo.
Very good evening to you. It is Wednesday evening. It is 7:30 p.m. My name is Farai Mwakutuya, and as always on ZFM Stereo, we bring you an effort that we call Ask the MP. Great to have your company, and we look forward to interacting and engaging with you over the course of the next hour. Tonight, I am joined in the studio by none other than Senator Douglas Monzora. He is the president of the MDCT, as well as the leader of opposition in Parliament. Great to have you on the program, sir.
Thank you very much, Farai, and thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on this station, and I want to greet the people of Zimbabwe, wherever you are, whatever the hardships that you are facing, we are concerned about that, and we know that together we can circumvent them.
Fantastic. We look forward, as I said, to hearing from you as the Zimbabweans that have just been referred to by Senator Monzora. Get in touch with us. WhatsApp 0731-168-045. You can send a comment or question or a voice note and tell us what you think as this program unfolds. Now, just to give a bit of background to the discussion, we know that the MDC president, Musa Monzora, who is here, said that key political reforms in the country will only come via dialogue and not confrontation, as these have to pass through parliament where the ruling ZANU-PF has a majority. Now, since winning the 2018 elections, President Mnangagwa has established the Political Actors Dialogue, POLAD, a platform which brings together all the candidates that contested in those polls. However, some parties have not joined that that dialogue for whatever reason they have. But we'll be talking about POLAD, we'll be talking about the effectiveness of this parliament, we'll be talking about those reforms, we'll also be talking about the situation in the country in terms of the economy and what our guest in the studio, Senator Monzora, has to say about that and his party. So let's get the ball rolling, sir. The parliament, the ninth parliament, is just a few months away from its expiry, from wrapping up its business as we head into another election. If I was to ask you to give an honest assessment of really the performance in terms of what has come out of it, its effectiveness, what bills have been passed, how would you rate this session?
Well, I think the parliament has done relatively well. But one must always remember that this parliament was affected by the lockdown. Zimbabwe was under lockdown for a period of 2 years, almost 2.5. And that did affect the work of the individual members of parliament in their constituencies, as well as the work overall of parliament. But there are a number of issues that this parliament has done very, very well. The first issue is the issue of trying to ensure that there is food security in this country. I am a member of a committee that is called the Committee of Peace and Security, which is a thematic committee of Senate. And 2 weeks ago, we told the countryside assessing the food situation in Zimbabwe. And what we saw was alarming to us. Mm-hmm. And just a few statistics to give you an idea of the level of possible despondence that is going to come. Bedbridge district alone, the whole of the district was only able to send about 1 ton of maize to the GMB.
The entire district.
And then the entire district of Binga, I'm just picking just two. The entire district of Binga was only able to send it to the GMB about 4 tons of maize. And then if you go to Matabeleland South, They are affected. A place called Kezi is just, again, another example, where we have 8,000 households that are in need of food security. Mm-hmm. We have children who are dropping out of school in Matabeleland South because of hunger, in Matabeleland North as well. So what we did notice is that the areas of Matabeleland are more affected than the others.
Mm-hmm.
We also saw that the type of assistance that go to the various areas within the country do not take into account the chief economic activities within those areas. For an example, Matabeleland is well known for livestock, and one would expect helping the people there with supplementary feed for their livestock, as well as to make sure that the water situation is good. But the fact that you have a parliament that is assessing for itself the situation in the country, and after which we were able to summon the minister to explain what the interventions are going to be. Mm-hmm. And he did tell us some of the interventions. We were also able to tell the minister that the current practice of accessing inputs by individual farmers is very inefficient. It is also prone to corruption. And what we did notice is that there is a requirement by the two banks that are dealing with agricultural support. They are requiring collateral, which the new farmers do not have. Most Zimbabwean people do not have the collateral. So there is a need for the government to intervene, and they have to make sure that these loans are guaranteed by the government. So in the area of food security, I think the parliament has done well. In the areas of human rights, again, we were able to visit the prisons where we focused on the criminal prisoners, people are convicted of criminal offenses. But you have people in prison who have not committed an offense.
Mm-hmm.
And these are usually foreigners who are looking for asylum. And the current system is that they are put in prison. What a way to welcome people who have not committed an offense, who are running away from persecution.
Yeah, looking for assistance.
They come
even
to Zimbabwe and they are put in prison. And that is very, very wrong. And talking about prison, we have young children who are children of mothers convicted. And they stay in prison with their mothers. There are no adequate facilities for them. Remember, these are people who have not committed offenses. We have also gone to the government to ask it to account for how the economy is going. Mm-hmm. And our good minister, Professor Mthuli Ncube, is on record to say that the economy is doing well. But on the ground, the people are not enjoying the economy. In fact, the lives of the Zimbabwean people have gone for the worse. The purchasing power has gone very, very badly. And we want to make sure that the key interventions by government are felt by the common people. It's not enough to say the economy has grown. To look at the statistics like the GDP, mm-hmm. The GDP per capita, and so on, all those economic figures that we hear about. What is important in a country is how the wealth is distributed.
Yeah.
And Zimbabwe has rising levels of inequality. We have a Zimbabwe that is a land of two nations now.
Mm-hmm.
We have the extremely rich people. If you go to Borodil, if you go to all these leafy suburbs, you see construction happening every day.
Yeah.
If you go to Highfield, if you go to Mfakose, Kwazana, and so on, no new construction is taking place. The gap between the rich and the poor is getting wider, and we are very worried about that as a parliament. And we have taken the minister to account.
Has he accounted?
Well, we are not very satisfied with the performance of the minister and the Minister of Finance. The performance of the government when it comes to the economy is, in my respectful view, very, very bad. And the minister told us that he had a problem of inflation that was being fueled by corruption in the finance market, where the exchange mm-hmm. rate. And he told us of an intervention that he has done, and that is to bring the dollar, the gold coin.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have noticed is that this gold coin is totally inaccessible to many people, including the members of parliament themselves. To tell you the truth, I haven't seen it. And many people have not seen it. So these are interventions that are not being felt by the common person. And at one point...
Yet he always tells us, or we're told for a long time, about a surplus.
Yes. This is where the point is, that the minister is relying on figures and is not relying on the effect of whatever the economy, whatever is happening in the economy, on the common man. The common man is not feeling the surplus. In fact, the common man is feeling a deficit because he is unable to afford school fees for his children, to afford health care for his loved ones. Some are even unable to bury decently their loved ones. And if you go to the issues of social security, pensions have been totally eroded. There are people who are in receipt of NASA and they are getting absolutely nothing. And this has cut across people, they've cut across a cross section of our people, including people like war veterans who are in receipt of government pensions. These pensions cannot buy anything. And this is where we have emphasized on this government, that the economic problems of Zimbabwe, the social problems of Zimbabwe, political challenges of this country are beyond the capacity of one political party, are beyond the capacity of one governing party. And we must now go to the issue of dialogue to resolve these issues. Dialogue is necessary because it will enable people to bring their ideas across the political divide and to help to resolve the problem together. For example, the MDC has three interventions that it is proposing as a way of kick-starting this economy. And these are key interventions in agriculture, in manufacturing, and in mining. And we have concrete proposals for resuscitation of economy using those three sectors. But we need a platform. We need a mechanism that we can input into the government so that we gouge this government into positive action. And that's why we are talking of dialogue.
So a couple of issues arise from what you've just said. I mean, you've said that, look, it's beyond the scope and ability of one party to resolve some of the challenges that we are facing. What about some who say, you know what, if they have failed, let's try someone else. Why should we dialogue? If they can't do it, let them get out and let's put someone else in there.
Well, the people of Zimbabwe don't have to suffer first for us to have a change of government. Certainly not. And remember that a government is elected for 5 years. So from the date of the announcement of elections to the date of the next elections, suffering doesn't stop. Zimbabweans continue to suffer. So people must not wait to say the economy must get worse so that the political fortunes of the opposition, for example, improve. That is being selfish. We need to resolve the people's issues right now. The people are feeling the hunger right now, and we have a year to go to the election. So we need to resolve the challenges. And we have said as the MDC that the main method of resolving this issue is through dialogue. And we derive our confidence from history. There was the grueling war of liberation, which ended at Lancaster House with the dialogue, and we had independence. And we had the madness in Matabeleland, in Gukurahundi, where our people were murdered. There was so much bloodletting. That was ended by the unity accord. It was dialogue. And then we had the bloodletting in 2008, where we lost about 300 youngsters to that senseless bloodletting. It was resolved via dialogue. Talking about 2008, we were able to resolve the economic challenges together. We were able to talk of dollar for two. The purchasing power, the purchasing ability of an average Zimbabwe changed for the better. And we were even able to solve the social issues. And more importantly, we were even able to do a constitution together. So there is enough historic evidence that dialogue does work. And slowly, we as the MDC are being absolved. It started as a fallen cry by the MDC, almost a shrill cry by the MDC in 2020 to say we must have dialogue in this country. And now we are happy to notice that some of the political parties who were so critical of the MDC are talking of this issue of dialogue. Churches are coming, civil society is coming, and other countries are coming, and we feel vindicated as the MDC.
One of the things you said, three particular sectors, very specific plans you have there, but what you said is that you don't have a platform. Isn't that, why don't you have that platform? Is that not where Pollard comes in?
No. Pollard is necessary but not sufficient. If I may say so, it is necessary but not sufficient, because the problems with Pollard now is that it does not have legislative capability. It cannot transform its agreements into laws. It cannot transform its agreements into policy because it has no legislative arm. That is why the MDC has proposed to the President of the Republic to say, if you want us to dialogue via Poland, we must create a platform of political parties in Parliament. This is it to enable any agreement reached at Poland to be transformed into laws, to be transformed into policies, to be actioned. So yes, Pollard is necessary, but as a starting point, but it is not sufficient. And that is why we as the MDC are saying we do have the ideas, and we have had some political parties saying they have the ideas as well. We need to be able to sit down together as Zimbabweans and ameliorate the suffering of our people.
The proposals that you've put forward and said to the head of state, what has been the response? The fact that we haven't seen this legislative arm could be that it's fallen on deaf ears?
Well, I was able to see the president on two occasions to discuss about dialogue. The first one was in 2021, on the 11th of June, and there I went with specific proposals. He replied on the 16th of September the same year, agreeing on most of the proposals, disagreeing on I think three. Then I said to him, I want to consult my party, I want to consult other stakeholders, and I was able to see him on the 16th of January this year. And he promised to come back to me regarding the final position on what we should do. And up to now, I have not been able to see him, and so on. Maybe he's been too busy. But if ZANU-PF is not taking the issue of dialogue seriously, if the president is not taking the issue of dialogue seriously, they are being very ahistorical, because dialogue has worked before. It is not for the benefit of the opposition. It is not for the benefit of ZANU-PF. It is for the benefit of the people of Zimbabwe. And dialogue has helped the people of Zimbabwe before. And we must forget our political differences. We must forget about the advantages we want to gain as we go to the elections. Because someone said to me that the economic collapse of a country favors the opposition. And we then commissioned a report that was done by one of our brilliant youngsters, and the results were that the collapse of an economy actually benefits a sitting government. This is because when there is poverty, when there is collapse, there are bigger levels of poverty, and there is more desperation, and people become more and more dependent on the state. They become more and more dependent on handouts, and therefore they become more and more they lack independence to make choices that they want. So some people may want to keep economy bad in order to have that result. But some people may want an economy to be bad so that a government looks bad. We in the MDC are saying, we want an economy that benefits the people of Zimbabwe. Whatever impact that has on our political fortunes. So we are calling for this abnegation on the party of the political leaders in this country. What is important is not MDC. What is important is not CCC. What is important is not ZANU-PF. What are important are the people of Zimbabwe.
Do you think, just looking at it really from your own point of view, that there can ever come a point where these three parties that you've just mentioned here can actually sit down and dialogue?
It has happened before in this country. We had people with worse parties, with worse relations in this country who came together. People who were bombing each other in Chimoyo, people who were bombing each other in Nyadzonya, Dukwe camp, and so on, were able to sit together. And that we haven't even reached that level of acrimony. And we saw in 2008, in 1987, the bloodletting that had happened in Matabeleland, genocide and so on. But people were able to swallow all that for the betterment of all Zimbabweans. And then in 2008, all that bloodletting, all that acrimony, all that name calling on Tsvangirai. But Tsvangirai had to say that the people of Zimbabwe are greater than an individual, and that he is going to do something in the best interest of the people of Zimbabwe. And he did that. And objectively speaking, the people of Zimbabwe's life changed for the better. The current crop of political leaders, let me just pick three. Myself, Advocate Chamisa, President Mnangagwa, is not individually, as political parties, arrived at the level of acrimony that existed at that at some point in time in this country. And therefore we bear a greater onus of coming together and doing things for the benefit of our people. And I am very happy that the MDC was ahead of its time. And I, as its leader, I was ahead of my time because I started articulating these things. And we were called all sorts of names, sellouts, this and that, and so on. But now we hear dialogue being talked about by people in the ruling party, by people within the opposition, in particular by people within the CCC. We hear dialogue being talked about by the people in the G40 who were very opposed to this. But you also see that the church has added its voice. Civil society has added their voice. Who are we to ignore those voices?
Indeed. Get in touch with us. Let us know what you think. Is dialogue the way forward? What format and how you think it should be done? 0731-168-045. 0731-168-045. Send a message or a voice note. Would love to hear from you. Let's get to a few questions that have come through before we move the discussion on, Senator Mwanzora. Get someone getting in touch and saying, what reforms have you advocated for as Pollard and that have actually been passed? Has Pollard done anything really?
Oh, thank you so much. There are a couple of things that the listener must understand, and it is that the MDCT is not yet part of Pollard. And this is because it has said that for Pollard to be meaningful, it must have legislative capability. It must have that platform of political parties in parliament. Now, I know that they've talked about electoral reforms, and they've produced their document. But I don't know what has happened to that document. But there is another low-key platform that is under the Zimbabwe Institute. And you have ZANU-PF, we have CCC, we have the MDCT in that platform. And they have been discussing about electoral reforms that they want to see. But the tragedy of this platform is that they have been discussing separately. In other words, ZANU-PF will have its meeting, the MDCT will have its meeting, the CCC will have its meeting, and these meetings took place in Kariba. That's not the way we should have dialogue. What we must have is people sitting together, confronting the hard facts of life, and looking at the problem in the eye, and asking a simple question: what is in the best interest of our people? So I am unable to vouchsafe for Poland, but regarding the reforms that we want to see in this country, we want to see key social reforms, reforms that address poverty. Our people are living in poverty, misery, and want. Reforms that address inequality. There is frightening inequality in this country, inequality across regions, inequality even across tribes, and inequalities across the political divide. We need to deal with that. And then, of course, the economy. The MDC has always said that our economic reforms must look at generating or developing an inclusive economy, a system, a developmental trajectory that leaves no one behind. It's the MDC that started talking about that, but we are encouraged that ZANU-PF is now talking about that as well, which means it is something good. We need electoral reforms. These electoral reforms, just to give you an example, I hear many people talking about ZEC without really analyzing how ZEC is constituted. We have the commission, and I can say that the commission is the least of the problems in ZEC.
Okay.
The main objectionable problems in ZEC are two, and it is the secretariat, which must be completely independent of the executive. That's not obtaining now. The second is there are subcommittees within ZEC. For an example, the logistics committee, the accreditation committee, who are dominated by appointees from the executive. So you have people from the president's office, people from the Minister of Foreign Affairs, people from Home Affairs Ministry, and so on. That compromises the independence of ZEC in a very, very big way. But these are reforms that don't require time. They simply require the correct attitude. And what we need to look at is what how other Africans have dealt with similar problems to ours. If we go to Kenya, for example, what happened towards the very last period of their electoral process, they had a very commendable election system. And so on. And they dealt with the issue of the independence of the election management body. They also dealt with the issue of the diaspora vote. Now, Zimbabwe, the Zimbabwean officials say, we cannot allow the diaspora vote because people must reside in a ward, must reside in a constituency, so that they are able to vote. That argument came up in Kenya, and how the Kenyans dealt with it was that the people in the diaspora will be allowed to vote for the president, because in that regard, in the case of a presidential election, the whole country is one constituency. So actually one needs to behave is his national ID, which proves that A, he is Zimbabwean, he or she is Zimbabwean, B, that they are above the voting age. And then you can have people voting for the president. And those people in the diaspora who want to come and vote, who want to vote for the MPs and the councillors, can travel. But right now, to deny 2 million, 4 million Zimbabweans in the diaspora the right to vote is to disenfranchise people. Remember, the war of liberation was, for among other reasons, for one man, one vote. People must decide who their leaders are going to be, and we want the diaspora vote to happen. ZANU-PF has said that they oppose the diaspora vote because they are under sanctions and they are unable to travel and campaign and access the voter. And we as the MDC have written to the United Nations to say that the sanctions in Zimbabwe must go, because these sanctions are not helping the poor people. They are making the rich richer, the poor poorer. And we have been vindicated by the sentiments of the United Nations itself. Through their special rapporteur, they agreed with us and said the sanctions must go. And we have been vindicated by SADC. And I want to point out, single out, two presidents in the SADC. And these presidents were recently in opposition: President Chakwera of Malawi and President Hichilema of Zambia. They have tweeted their support for the removal of sanctions in Zimbabwe. And we are also vindicated by the behavior of the United States. It seems to have a change of tact when it comes to the issue of sanctions on Zimbabwe. So we would like to encourage these countries to look at the best interests of our people mostly. We think that the sanctions must go. We think that the sanctions are hitting the poor. And we think that the sanctions are very unfair on Zimbabwean business.
Let me stop you there, because I want to take a few questions that are coming through from our listeners. One listener says, dialogue is a no. This means elections become irrelevant. Nyika inotongwa nemunhu one. Someone else here saying, why is it that your party appears to divide the opposition in general? Was it not advisable to have a united opposition? That is Paul in Hatfield getting in touch. And then we have one more here saying, well, two more. This is my first time hearing Senator Mwondora talking sense. These three people whom he mentioned really need, to dialogue, because they say the economy is improving, but on the ground it's a different story. Please put the people first. We need change in this country. There's one more I'd like to read, and then I'll allow you to respond to that. Baba Chris Nishtungwitha says, Mwondora actually is deep and he speaks sense, but turning against the party of the people led by Chamisa is where he messed up. Political suicide. Sadly, next election he won't get more than 5 parliamentary seats. So he's saying, so a couple of questions there. So this very last question, I think, speaks to, you know, the culture in this country, where you are either this side or that. You're either black or white. You're either this side or that side. Speak to us as you respond to some of these questions.
Thank you very much. First of all, the first question, that dialogue will mean there will be no elections. That's not correct.
Renders them irrelevant.
That's not correct. When we had dialogue in 1979, in 1980 we had elections. And when we had dialogue in 1987, and we concluded the unity accord, in 1990 we actually had elections. And when we had dialogue in 2008, 2009, in 2013 we had elections. Dialogue means that we will sort the conditions for free and fair elections. It is not a substitute of elections. So this is where we have been misunderstood. When we talk of dialogue, we are not talking of avoiding the elections. We are talking about making the electoral process fairer, making the electoral process more bearable. And if I had my way as Douglas, I want election time to be fun time for the people of Zimbabwe, not a matter of life and death for the people of Zimbabwe. That is unfair. Two questions that have been put, and it is that we divided the opposition. And I want to go into a bit of some history here. The MDC that was left by Morgan Tsvangirai has a constitution. And some people decided to follow the constitution, other people decided not to follow the constitution. And there was litigation. Some people thought of agreeing with the ruling of the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with Nelson and myself. It had to do with the principle. And the principle is that as people are aspiring to rule this country, we must always lead by example. We must follow the constitution of our parties. And I decided to follow the constitution. And that is not difficult to see. If you look at my history, I am a constitution maker, having been the co-chairperson of COPAC in this country. And by the way, the COPAC constitution was my third attempt at writing the constitution of Zimbabwe. So that shows that we must follow the constitution. We haven't gone against anyone at all. I want to appeal to the people of Zimbabwe, and especially the opposition. And that is to not to prejudge what is going to happen. Right now, what is happening is work in progress. Even the by-election that happened, it is work in progress. The political game is defined by the end game. And it is too early to write the obituary of Mr. Monzora. It is too early to write the obituary of the MDC. Right now, I want to invite my friend in Chitungwiza there to just observe what is happening within the MDC. The MDCT right now, there is a lot of restructuring happening throughout the country, 4-5 meetings a day. And these are small crowds, 40, 50, 100 people. It's not a rally because we are not reaching for the mass. We are reaching for the structure. And let me then say to my friend, when you want to build a political party, it's built around three things. That is structure, strategy, and of course culture. And what I have tried to do as the president of the MDC is to build the culture of democracy. I am happy to say I am the only president of a political party who can be criticized within the party, with the members not suffering any consequences.
Any backlash, indeed.
Any backlash. And right now we are going to our Congress, and I have said that all the positions can be contested, including the position that I hold. I have not yet a political leader in this country saying the same.
Just on that, Francis and Borodel had asked about that, so let us hear what you have to say on this. Francis and Borodel had asked, please kindly ask Senator Monzora when they are having the elective Congress, since he says he follows the constitution correctly.
Thank you very much, Francis. The Congress is going to happen very, very soon. But I can't give you a date today because I have to advise my National Council first. I have to advise the National Executive and the Standing Committee. That's how we do things. But let me advise him on what caused the delays. What we noticed when we went to the by-elections was that the party had very weak structures across the country. And as you know, the people who go to the Congress are the structures. So we had to conclude the restructuring of the party. And I said to the organizing department, as soon as you are ready with the structures, then we can call for the Congress. This is because on this Congress, we wanted to have a definite voters roll that is certified by the Secretary General, the Organizing Secretary, etc. That is going to be used by at the Congress, so that people don't cheat one another. So the organizing department told us last week that they are 70% through with the structure, so only 30% is remaining. That's number one. The second thing is that the issue of finance. I made a point to the National Standing Committee that I want the party to fund the Congress and not the various aspiring leaders. So people will be ferried from across the country by their party. They will be fed by their party. When they get to the Congress venue, they owe nobody anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they can vote freely. So, I'm sorry, Christopher, but the Congress is going to happen. It's going to happen very, very soon. How you will know that the Congress is going to happen is that you will hear that we will call the National Council to formally advise it, and then we will announce the date.
Victor is getting in touch. Asked two questions here. Well, first, response to the point you've just made. He says, you were criticized by the aspiring MP of Kambu Zuma, and he was fired. So I think on the issue of but then he also asked a question here saying, what is your take on the issue or the continued incarceration of Honorable Sikala? I have another question here I would like to ask. Senator Mwondora pretends to be fighting for Zimbabwe while he does that to fulfill his own ego. Constitutional Amendment number 2 was a nail in the coffin. He pretended to support the women and youth quota, yet he was supporting the death of democracy. He talks dialogue, but recently recalled an MP in Bulawayo.
Thank you very much. First of all, the question about the aspiring candidate of Kambu Zuma, I think he is talking about Mr. Fungai Chiposi. Mr. Fungai Chiposi was not fired by the party. He resigned from the party. He resigned on his own accord and he joined the CCC. He was not fired by us. If he's talking about Mr. Metu, the aspiring candidate for Epworth, mm-hmm. He actually resigned from the party. He actually had a press conference where he says he said I had left the party. And all we then did was to write confirming to him that he was no longer our member. The fact that we are democratic, the fact that we preach democracy, does not mean that we condone indiscipline within the party. We condone the offenses within the party.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the offenses that Mr. Metu committed, that I am not liberty to say here, because he is not here to answer for himself. But these people were not fired by us. Go to their Twitter accounts. Go to the press conferences that they held. They are there on YouTube. You will find that they left the party on their own volition. Actually, Mr. Chiposi wrote a letter to me to say that he cherished the time that we had worked together as a unit, and that he had to move on. We don't stop people from joining political parties of their choices, but to say that we fired them is not true. I am very perturbed about the continued incarceration of Job Sikala for a number of reasons, of course, but some people may not know what I have done. I actually tried to see Mr. Sikala with the intention of helping him because I think I can help.
Mm-hmm. How so?
I won't tell you, but I because it's a strategy also.
Okay.
But remember, first and foremost, I am a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
and I think I have a skill that he may want to make use of. And I tried to see him in prison. I was told by the prison officers that I needed to get special permission from the commissioner of general of prisons. And I went to the commissioner and I was told to wait for, I think it was 20 minutes. And I received a polite reply that I should seek permission from the Minister of Justice, Minister Ziyambi Ziyambi. I then wrote a letter to Minister Ziyambi Ziyambi that I wanted to see Job Sikala. Minister Ziyambi has not replied to my letter, but I am not going to give up on that. If Minister Ziyambi doesn't allow me to see a prisoner, I am taking him to court, because this is not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
The type of prosecution that Sikala and company are going through is unprecedented in this country.
Mm-hmm.
They have been in detention, I think, for close to 90 days.
I think it's 100
yes.
now.
Yes.
I saw the other day 100 milestone. Yes.
Yes. So and again, their trial date is being pushed, and this is sadistic. And this is not acceptable. And I want the people of Zimbabwe to know that I am a constitution maker. And I was part to drafting the Bill of Rights. which gives Zimbabweans freedoms, including Sikala. So I have done something towards helping him. And by the way, when Joanna Mamombe was in prison, I used to visit her and her colleagues. The CCC people don't talk about that because they have this character of Monzora that they want to portray to the people. The issue of Amendment number 2, my friend, you are very, very wrong. On the issue of Amendment number 2, there were four issues. There was the issue of the running mate. There was the issue of the term of the judges, the extension of the term, women and youth. If you go to the answer, say, if you care to research, you must go and read my debate in the Senate, where I was fighting against the extension of the term of the judges. And I did warn Minister Ziyambi that if anybody took him to court, they would win. And I was to be proven correct. The matter was taken to court. And the High Court made an order in favor of, against the amendment. Then there was the issue of the women's quota. Now, tell me, I was part of the people who wrote the constitution and said we must give the women their quota. That's not what they had asked for. They had asked for 50-50. So giving them a quota was an incremental gain towards women emancipation. And what type of constitution maker would I have been to support an amendment to remove that quota for women, to remove that gain that they had gotten as women? I don't think that was correct. Then the youth. Why should I have opposed an amendment which gives youth seats in parliament? Why should I have done that as a constitution maker? The youth made strong representations under COPAC to say we want a youth quota. We didn't give them. And here was an opportunity to give them. Now, I want some people, maybe within the CCC, to answer this question. Is the issue of women less important than the running mate? Is the issue of the youth less important than the issue of the judges? I don't think so. We are talking of two demographic groups that have been marginalized throughout our history. And we know that. We know that because of culture, our women did not get the same facilities as the males, and we need some form of affirmative action. So, yes, if I am guilty of supporting that amendment, I supported the women's quota, I supported the youth quota, I was against the extension of the judges, I was against the removal of the running mate. But if the listener was able to follow in parliament, we voted in parliament. And because of the numbers in parliament, we were defeated in parliament. My party was defeated. But we went down fighting. But I am happy that for the women, we have preserved the women's quota. And in the MDC, we are going to introduce an amendment for 50-50. We are very serious about women in emancipation. We are serious about the youth. The youth are not leaders of tomorrow. They are leaders of today. So they must be allowed to be in positions of power. And for the first time, they have a quota in parliament. What is wrong with that?
Is there, I mean, obviously, you are the legal mind, and obviously you could advise this better. Is it prudent or advisable to have had all those four very fundamental issues in one amendment? Was it not better to separate them so that we don't have this sort of scenario?
It would have been ideal to separate them. But the government, the minister who brought the amendment, brought it as a composite amendment. And obviously it was to put some things which are acceptable and some things which are not acceptable. And some of the things that were acceptable to us were extremely compelling. Having heard the women speak about the need for women emancipation in this country, it was a persuasive amendment to me. Having heard the youth talking about how marginalized they are, how they are made hewers of wood and drawers of water, how they are just used by politicians to beat up people, and they are fed on drugs, and after an election they are forgotten. Having listened to those arguments, I found it compelling that we must have a youth quota in parliament. I also found it compelling that we must have a women's quota in council. So 30%, I think 30% of councillors are going to be women. Again, I want my critics to tell me what is wrong with that.
Okay, Senator Monzero, let's move on to, we revisit the issue of reforms, electoral reforms, and I want to ask two things here. First of all, we have often heard the ruling party, or certainly I've heard people within the ruling party expressing some sentiment that it would be unwise or it would be politically naive to reform yourself out of power. And so these reforms that you speak about, as you quite rightly say, level the playing field, a playing field that you allege is not level right now. Do you see cooperation or desire to actually implement these reforms, given the sentiment I've just mentioned, where people say, you know, it would be politically naive to do so? Secondly, I want to talk about the controversial ZEC fees, which I understand the court ruled, should be done away with, which I also understand as MDC you supported in when it came up. Is that not counterproductive to inclusivity in electoral processes to have such exorbitant fees that you supported?
First of all, we did not support the exorbitant fees, and we did make our point very, very clear. But some people who chose to misunderstand me did not pay attention to was my support to the fact that we need to shorten the ballot paper. And therefore, the issue of fees for a presidential candidate, it's nothing new and peculiar to Zimbabwe. It may be the level of the fees, but the fees per se are justifiable even in most countries.
Why should we shorten it? If I feel I want to run, why should I be?
Because you shouldn't waste the people's time. Because if you have no possibility of winning, and so on, you shouldn't just get into the election for the fun of it. This is a serious matter. People of Zimbabwe are choosing a leader. And of course, in other countries, there is imposition of fees. Now, it is the amount of fees that we can debate about, not the concept. Then coming to the MPs, the fee for the MPs is extremely unacceptable. You want $1,000? That means if you want to contest 210 constituencies, you must have $210,000, which is almost a quarter of a million. That is then very, very oppressive. Why? Because we have seen in history some MPs who are not financially indigent, but are very, very competent when they come to their work of representing the people. And we have seen people of unfathomable integrity, but without financial muscle. So the issue of the fees for the MPs, we don't support. The issue of the fees of the senators being less than the fees of the members of parliament does not make sense, because the senators have no electoral expense, because they depend on the votes of the members of parliament. So to lessen their fees was extremely unreasonable. Now let me go back to the issue of reforms and this common problem. Misconception that people cannot reform themselves out of power. People can actually rigiditize themselves out of power. I'm just inventing a word here. I'm not so sure whether it's there. But you can be so rigid that it takes you out of power. You can be so flexible that it makes you retain power. Now, why ZANU-PF must accept the issue of electoral reforms is the historical fact that free and unfair elections are winnable. In 1980, the elections were not free and fair for ZANU-PF. It won those elections. In Zambia, we had complaints by Hichilema and company that the sitting government was making the a playing field uneven, but he won the election. In Kenya, Mr. Ruto complained about his mistreatment by the sitting head of state and the unevening of the playing field. He won. So it is not necessarily true that you can win, you won't win unfree and unfair elections. When you are making reforms, you are doing it for posterity. You are doing it not because you must be in power, but because it is the correct thing to do. It is a democracy that you want to do. What I hear these people saying is that we mustn't be democratic if being democratic gets us out of government. If we take that argument even further, if murdering people keeps them in power, then they can say it is justified. That is never the spirit of the Constitution. Our Constitution talks of democracy, and therefore we must have electoral reforms that guarantee that the vote is free and fair. Now, ZANU-PF doesn't stand to benefit from continuous challenges on its illegitimacy if it wins. I don't think President Mnangagwa likes it when his legitimacy is challenged. Mm-hmm. Now, to avoid the challenges of legitimacy, we must have these reforms that guarantee the freeness of the election. And these questions of legitimacy have far-reaching consequences. Number one, the international community regard of Zimbabwe. Remember when we had the 2018 elections, there were a number of foreign observer missions which came and made specific observations and specific recommendations on Zimbabwe's electoral system. And we are saying, let's just follow that as one of the ways of making Zimbabwe get integrated into the international community of nations. Does ZANU-PF not benefit from the reintegration of Zimbabwe into the international community of nations? I think it does. But if ZANU-PF doesn't want, the people of Zimbabwe will stand to benefit. And as I said, what is important is what is in the best interest of our people.
A listener getting in touch saying, big up Monzora for fighting for Sikala's freedom. The opposition should stand together. He wraps up by saying, I think, which you've just spoken to, Mr. Monzora, ZANU-PF will not agree to reforms because they will lose power. But I want to come back to that point regarding Honorable Sikala, which we spoke about earlier. It has been suggested by some legal minds that this is perhaps now a political solution is what is required. Do you agree with that, or is it still in the realms of legality? Because, as you say, someone must be there's certain minimum standards that must be met.
Well, I think first of all, Sikala's case is beginning to look more and more political because his trial date is being delayed. If the authorities wanted him to stand trial and not run away until the trial, then they have betrayed themselves by pushing further his trial date. He was fighting about court papers, being given state papers to prepare his defense. And that is unfair. And this issue was dealt with in the case of State versus Ndabaningistole. Remember, Ndabaningistole was accused of wanting to murder President Mugabe using a claymore mine and an AK rifle, a rusted AK rifle. And he wanted the state papers to prepare for his case, and they kept on delaying. And the courts ruled that the ability to defend oneself, to prepare for one's case, was a fundamental right. Now, it doesn't change because it happens to be Job Sikala. He may be a person whose personality you don't want. And this is exactly what we are taught in a subject called jurisprudence in law. And in jurisprudence, there is this chapter of the theory of the unpopular client. Mm-hmm. If a person is unpopular and to you, and they come to you, but their case is good, do you give them justice? Now, I think people must go to one principle of law, and that is that justice must be blind. Justice must be blind to Job Scala's political affiliation, Job Scala's character, or Job Scala's previous utterances. What must be important to the authorities is whether Job Scala will run away. And there are ways of securing him other than imprisonment. They can confiscate his passport and other travel documents. They can order him to report to the nearest police station so that they make sure that he's there, and so on. There are a number of ways to secure his presence, and this continued incarceration is barbaric, and we do not agree with it. And I have made it clear to the government that this is unacceptable. I have written to the minister. I shouldn't have, because I don't have to. But I have written to the minister because I wanted to follow the rules that they have set. And if the minister doesn't give me the opportunity to go and see Mr. Scala, I am taking the minister to court, because this is unfair.
Fantastic. On that note, we must end this discussion because we're out of time. But I want to thank you so much, Senator Ngonzela, for coming through to the program. Leader, President of the MDCT, as well as the Leader of the Opposition in Parliament. Great to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to all the listeners who tuned in, and more importantly, those who got in touch with us and interacted with us. Ask the MP will be back again on this very same channel at 7:30 p.m. next Wednesday. Be sure to join me then. Enjoy the rest of your evening's entertainment, and keep it Z. Good night.